WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. This you know because I am surrounded by the Tarka ice cream here. I still got to get some refills on my Honey Graham as well as my my Mint Flicks and Chills. Don Moeller is with us. We are back on the Baltimore Positive beat. D.I., I have decided to wear my red, white, and blue shirt to honor our friends at Fadley's, and the fact that somehow, some way, a year almost to the date, the infamous Fadley's How to Pick a Crab video has yet again gone viral here for the 4th of July. So I just want to welcome you.
It's a summertime phenomenon.
It really is, man. And, you know, people are asking me if I'm still picking the crabs the same way. I'm not, but I'll get to that later on. Fadley's is delivering crabs, crab cakes. Damien Hahn's going to join us on Baltimore Positive this week to discuss some of the challenges on the Eastern Shore and the Western Shore and Maryland on crabbing issues. Very, very important. Order your crab cakes. Get them online at Fadley's. They got crabs. They're down at Lexington Market. They're building and Catonsville as well. Speaking of Catonsville, Don, some oxygen for you. Evan Brown's also going to join us here this week on Baltimore Positive because we haven't been able to get out there and see what, you know, rock and roll pictures he has on the wall. But you've been out there in the big tent, and I know there's big news out of Catonsville, right?
Well, Evan and his partner Keith Holsey just continue to grow their business. In just a few weeks, they're going to be opening up what I think will become one of the real attractions in the region, a brand new Mexican restaurant in the Catonsville Village.
El Guapo.
El Guapo has really become a restaurant center. I mean, people coming from really all over the state to have dinner at one of the Catonsville restaurants. And then there's a hot rumor that they may even be branching out with another restaurant in Catonsville. We have Evan on. We'll have to ask him to do that. And of course, we have, I'm always amazed, Nestor Moeller and Gary Realtors, Jeff Moeller. I am shocked, and there have been a number of articles recently about the real estate market and how hot it is, and Jeff confirms that. It's amazing the number of homes that he's listing and selling during this pandemic. So if you're bored and you're ready to move on, give Jeff a call, 410-746-1547. And we always thank our good friends at Center Maryland for being a resource and getting the story out about Baltimore Positive. So with that, Nestor, let's welcome our guest.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, the former Baltimore County executive would bring on lots of Baltimore County folks. We thought this was a good time. We've been talking a lot about, you know, unrest in our society and talking about issues of race, talking about issues of poverty and urban issues. And me being down in North Carolina last week, and Don, you and I have been talking about the differences between cities and our population here. You've known this guy a long time, and I actually know his brother, and before we had him on the air, I said, I know your brother, and you said, Tony Fugit, you said, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And I said, I like him, despite the fact that he was a Redskin at one point. So we want to welcome on the Baltimore County NAACP branch president, a longtime president, and a longtime friend to Don Moeller, and certainly a friend of Baltimore Positive, Tony Fugit, back on. Tony, how you doing, man? How you holding up throughout this this whole COVID thing? We've all been locked down so long, and now the weather's warm, and we got all sorts of problems in the country, but you know, I know you've been dealing with a lot of these sorts of issues for a long, long time, right?
Yeah, I have been. But I guess this is one that I guess most of us and all of us probably have never dealt with. And this is the new norm and trying to get used to the new norm. So I've sort of been working from home for the last, 14 weeks or so. So it's a total different world now than it was back in February.
Well, for all the changes we've seen, you know, clearly the fact that we've had a pandemic and we're wearing masks and we've talked about all those things, but clearly what happened in Minneapolis has sort of rocked our country in all sorts of ways in the middle of this leadership that Don and I don't try not to say the T word too much around here because it could drive us mad. But just from what your eyes have seen here during this period of time, for Freddie Gray and for what we saw in Ferguson, for here in Baltimore and for electing a new mayor, which we've talked so much about here in recent times, Baltimore County and what you've seen in Baltimore County over the better part of two decades here to start our century, run us through what the NAACP does in Baltimore County and your history and how it brings us to where we are right now.
Well, that's a mouthful. You know, it's interesting
in that
one of the things that we've always been struggling with is that Baltimore County needed to have an identity. Typically, when you think of Baltimore, you think of the Baltimore regional area. And if you're not from here, by the way, you think Baltimore County is the county seat for Baltimore City. And we all know that that's not the case. So what we've been trying to do is to get focus on things that are happening and trying to make a positive way in Baltimore County. And that's a very, if you would, large project to take on, because if you think about it, Baltimore County goes from Sparrows Point, Turner Station, all the way around to Arbutus, you know. So you've got quite a bit of landmass that you have to address. And what we look at are civil rights issues throughout the county in terms of trying to make it better for all the citizens of Baltimore County. We've been focused in a couple of key areas prior to the pandemic, and housing was probably our number one push, and we had an agreement where we're going to have more affordable housing in high opportunity areas in the county, and the county's making progress in that area, and we're pleased with that. And believe it or not, we've been working with the police department for some time, and I think Don could probably tell you that one of the last meetings we had was about the police department, some activities that were going on in the department. So we've always had some concern there in terms of what was happening with the police department internally, you know, and as long as you can get it right internally, then you can be, if you would, a good face to the community. So we are working with the Baltimore County Police Department in that area. And as a matter of fact, I'm on the task force that's looking at the disproportionate number of stops of African Americans in Baltimore County. So we've been active there. We've also been active in education, and that we have to look at that all students are treated equally, if you would, in the county as it relates to the remote education that they're receiving today. And what does the back-to-school plan look like, and how do you, if you would, level set all the children and get them back on pace and on course? And we've had meetings with the administration of the school system about that, and then we're also going to be meeting with the superintendent to discuss how that's going to be implemented and what that's going to look like given the various scenarios that they have. So those are the major areas that we've been focusing on, and I could go into detail on any and all of those.
Well, Tony, I wanted to unpack that a little bit, because as you said, there is a lot there. I was shocked. I mean, we've known each other a long time. Heck, you go back, you were a Gibbons Crusader, I was a Gale. So we were sort of right down the street from one another, even growing up. I will say my school was still there, though, Tony.
Well, see, and I never held that against you. So you gotta just...
Well, he started talking all this. We go all the way from Sparrows Point to Arbutus. I'm like, we're Dundalk to Catonsville every time we talk, right?
But let's look at the issues. When I saw, Tony, that you were elected in 1999, it almost didn't compute. I guess it's a product of age again, but time just flies. Fine. You have been president now of the NAACP for 20 years, and in that time, Baltimore County's African-American population has basically doubled. I think it was around 16% when you took office, and now it's just about 30%. What progress have you seen in the 20 years, and then what's the most frustrating thing that remains the same?
Well, you know, it has been a while now that you made me look back. I remember a gentleman by the name of Dunbar Brooks. I don't know how many people remember Dunbar Brooks. But Dunbar Brooks did a presentation once that, and he called it the Browning, if you would, of Baltimore County. And in essence, he pulled out his crystal ball and he said that, in fact, what you just stated was going to happen in Baltimore County, and that Baltimore County would have to adjust to that. So, for example, having a minority-majority school district is something that had to be adjusted to, and the accommodations that had to be made there. So you saw the world changing, if you would, in terms of, if you would, people coming to the county. And what we were trying to focus on were minority businesses growing in the county and coming to the county. What did the public, you know, if you would, the system look like in terms of superintendents? And I guess the last three or four superintendents in the Baltimore County public school system have been African-American. You know, what kind of changes like those are happening to make progress, if you would, in the county? And we've seen steady progress there. I mean, it's been a positive move, slow at times in some areas, but it's been a positive growth and moving forward and people saying, hey, maybe we're not that different in the end of the day at all.
Well, Tony, when you look at some of those issues, and we mentioned all these issues, particularly around public safety, and again, full disclosure, you and I and my predecessor, Kevin Kamen, it's all the way back to Jim Smith, we worked closely on some of these issues. As you said, we focused, Kevin Kamen was focusing like a laser beam on increasing the diversity of recruit classes in the county, in police and fire, knowing that, I think in one of the articles it said it's like turning a battleship. You can't improve the overall diversity overnight, but you can do it over time. And I know you've been involved in some of those recruitment issues. Give us your observations on where the county's heading and outreach and efforts that they're trying to do to continue to build on that momentum that we had started really during the Kamenitz administration. And I know current executive John Olszewski is passionate about this issue and really looking to move forward as well.
Right. You know, when you try to change an institutional culture, as you stated, that's not an easy thing to do. And if you remember back, the Department of Justice came in and looked at the testing system for the police department and found that there were some faults with the testing. And the county exec took the bold move to say that we'll no longer do the testing because it was discriminatory on its face. And what I say is that if you've got a test, which is kind of the first step in the process, and it's discriminatory, okay, you know, if people are doing that, do you think that they're stopping at the test? You know, does it, the interview, does the, you know, all the steps that it takes to become a Baltimore police officer, in fact, you know, what do they look like and what's happening? Because the Blue Guardian, which are the African American Police Officers in Baltimore County Association, would say that the number of applications were actually up. You know, so they were entering the system, but they weren't coming out on the back end. So where was it breaking down? And I believe that with what the county exec most recently announced, the reorganizing of where recruitment will sit in the organization, and now it's sitting under an African-American colonel currently, that maybe we may see some changes there and it may work to the positive, and they're going to actually have somebody on the outside go in and take a look at it to see what is happening there. And that's something that the Guardian has been asking for a number of years, for somebody to go and look at the recruitment process. So now that those actions are actually going to take place, I think that you're going to see some positive results that are going to come out of it.
Tony Fugit is our guest. He is the Baltimore County NAACP president. Get all my P's together here, Tony. I want to move to education with you because, I mean, that's really where Don lives. And, you know, he was my high school guidance counselor in 1982. I tried to get that in every segment, which is why you're here today, Tony. On the education side of just the breakdown of COVID for classrooms and bringing kids together, and I know, you know, your education background as well and what you've been fighting for, we've talked about it so much. I mean, from superintendents, city CEO, and Sonia Santelices, Dr. Santelices has been on with us to talk about how we're going to move that forward. I know that's a concern, not just in Baltimore County. That's a concern everywhere in this country right now.
Right, and yes, we are definitely concerned in terms of how we get to what the new normal is going to be for education that is inclusive of all children, special needs, and the like, to make sure that they all receive a quality education. And I guess we're dealing with an unknown in the pandemic because we're not sure what the world is going to look like in the fall. I mean, some folks were saying, hey, we're through phase one of this thing, or stage one, and maybe we're not, because if you look at what's happening in the southern states, the numbers are starting to rise considerably again. So, you know, what is that environment that we're looking at? And I think that by the school system setting up, if you would, three different scenarios, that's a very positive thing, with the first scenario being that it would be like it was at the end of the year and it would be all remote, and then scenario two would be a quasi-remote environment, and then phase three would be, if you would, back things back to normal. And what would that look like and how would that look? And we just want to make sure that every student has the opportunity to achieve through this pandemic. And that's really been our focus and what we've been working on.
Tony, picking up, and again, it is going to be a challenge in the fall. And as you said, it appears as if not only is phase one of this pandemic not over, it appears that phase one is raging. Nestor, I didn't even share this with you off the air, but I just got word this morning. I have a younger cousin, 40 years old, in Florida, who was just diagnosed with COVID and is pretty much convinced that it came from a grocery store because he's been very good about isolating and staying away. But he indicated that literally no one in Florida, from the workers to the people in the store, is wearing a mask. So he's pretty confident that he got this on his way to a grocery store, and it appears out of control, which, Tony, I think will make opening schools very, very difficult. And I think the concern, and I know the NAACP has this concern, is that this situation, this medical situation, this public health situation, is really going to exacerbate the education gap, and the haves will continue to get their education because their home situation will make it possible. And then those without Wi-Fi, with different challenging situations, there's a real danger they'll fall behind again. Is that an issue that the NAACP is focused on?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think back on the superintendent, when Dallas Dance was superintendent of the school system, he had this program where he wanted every student to have access to technology. I mean, and if you can go back and say, hey, we should have stayed on that course and we should have continued to push that and made sure that everybody had the technology in hand, you know, we would be prepared for, you know, something like this, because you could basically put the hotspots where you needed to put them to get to all of the students and be able to work with them through, if you would, technology. And then if there were special needs, maybe you could set up a scenario to get people to come in on certain days to get certain programs, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that the technology, believe it or not, is going to be the key in this. And you're right, Don. We've always, minorities have always, and if you would, it's an economic thing. If you have a computer and if you have technology in the house, you're there and you can continue to do that. If it's not there, you're going to be in trouble. And you'll find that's an economic thing, and unfortunately a number of African Americans fall below that line and don't have that technology and that capability. So that's something that we're really concerned with, and see how we can get technology in the hands of the student and make them as productive as possible.
Tony,
Go ahead, Ness.
I don't know how I could have you on here this week on the backside of having the President of the United States retweeting white power videos. And, you know, every time I see something like that, I think about all the challenges that have come before for your organization. And, you know, Kwaisi's a neighbor of mine, has been for two decades, and now back in public service again. And, you know, having had conversations about where we are in this country, you know, good people on both sides, in Charlottesville a couple years ago, but where we are with this election a couple of months out, for what every American could and should be doing, not just about the Russian thing this weekend, but just about what's right and what's wrong and what the NAACP has stood for a long, long time. And I can't imagine, you know, on a daily basis leading an organization like that in the era of Trumpism, right? Like it's just one constant struggle, like literally, right?
Well, let me take a minute to talk about the organization. Okay, there's a national board of the NAACP, and then you have branches that have jurisdiction. Like there's a branch president in Baltimore City, in Baltimore County, in Carroll County, Anne Arundel County, et cetera. Okay, and, you know, I used to say that you're only as good as the local branch, meaning that anything that's going on in Baltimore County, you know, Tony Fugit, as president, speaks for the NAACP. So what we can do is to focus on local issues, you know, and let the national take care of Mr. Trump. You know, and don't get me wrong, I mean, they will pass down initiatives to us. For example, we're doing everything we can to make everyone aware of the census and that it's time to stand up and be counted as it relates to the census.
By the way, that's Don's number one issue.
there's going to be an undercount, and right, COVID's going to contribute to that undercount. I'm very worried about it.
Exactly. So we're making that an issue. We're doing voter registration. And then we do get out to vote. I mean, we basically, you know, we're nonpartisan, first of all. So I can't, you know, I can talk to issues, but not necessarily the people. So we are a nonpartisan organization. But if you look at where the issues stack up, it kind of gives you a clear case on where your vote should be, I would suspect. But what we want to do is make sure that we have educated voters and that they get out and they participate and that they do vote. And the one thing with this, with the Floyd situation that took place is I think that the millennials and the generation behind the millennials have awakened and they say, hey, wait a minute. You know, we have overcome and maybe we haven't overcome. And if you look at who's in the streets right now and who's doing it, it's the younger folks that are out there. You know, it's like a wake-up call. And I suspect that they will vote, and I think that it will make a difference in the upcoming election. And it was just a wake-up call to the young folks.
Well, I'll tell you what. Don's been saying that for how many years? 50 years now, Don? The young people are going to make a difference, right?
Well, I've told you, Nestor, it's always been fool's gold. But this one does feel different, and there are a couple of things. I mean, just recently, it now appears, and by the time this airs, it may be confirmed that there actually may be a paper trail that the President of the United States was fully informed that the Russians were paying for dead American soldiers in Afghanistan. I mean, as I've said publicly, if that proves to be true, I think the President needs to resign immediately. So we remain in a state of flux in the nation and really times that we've never seen before.
By the way, I did not have Saharan dust storm on my dance card either for this week. So,
let me ask Tony before you get out of here, really important issue, police reform all across the country. County Executive Ischewski jumped out really, you know, boldly announced some initiatives that the county police department's going to take. You indicated one was to get outside consultants to look at hiring practices. A lot of it's focused on transparency and the use of force policy. Councilman Julian Jones, who we're going to be talking with shortly, has an excessive use policy that he's going to put forward. From the NAACP's perspective, what are the key components that should be included in police reform in the country as subdivisions undertake this, Tony?
Well, here's the most important thing there. I think that when these announcements are made, and they're wonderful announcements, you would like to know who had the seats at the table to draft these components, if you would, and do these things. So, you know, for example, I got a call 10 minutes before it was announced. And I'm going like, huh, what's in it? How, you know what I mean? And I think that, you know, when you take that approach, that might have been the old playbook. But the new playbook says is that you got to sort of build that up from the ground up and get the community involved. I mean, even if it's a couple of days involved to review it, to see what's going in it, what we're looking at doing to say, hey, yeah, that makes sense. We agree with that. But, you know, to kind of give it the vote of approval the day it's announced and you haven't seen it, that's a very difficult thing to do. I would hope you would agree that would be difficult to do. I mean, but if you look at the titles are like, you know, they capture you, you know, like police reform, you know, like recruitment, you know, transparency. I mean, those are wonderful buzzwords, you know, easier said than done. As we said earlier on, it's very difficult to change an internal culture in an organization, you know, and if you saw what happened in Prince George's County with the police department recently, okay, and how minority officers, even with if you would, majors, et cetera, were bypassed, overlooked, weren't a part of the organization. You know, my fear has always been that the same situation could be happening in Baltimore County. And we're hoping that it's not, but there is that possibility that it could be happening that way. As a matter of fact,
give us your top three then, Tony. Because I know time is short. I know you have other appointments. Give us your top three. If you came together with other leaders, with a panel across the state. Let's bring leaders across the state. Let's make it bigger than Baltimore County. You got leaders across the state. You got a captive audience. Give me the top three items that you want to make sure are included in any police reform efforts?
Okay, the first thing that I would want is that for every, and whatever they would call it in the police department, performance plan or whatever, that there is a diversity component, that people are managed to and that are evaluated against. And either they're doing it and they're in, or they're not doing it and they're out. So that would be a major component in the performance plan for any executive in a police department. Okay. The other thing would be to make sure that there was a level playing field in the recruitment department. Okay. In that you, if you would, have an equal opportunity to actually get in the door. And then the third thing is a very difficult thing, and it basically, if you would, by department is different. In Baltimore City is different than Baltimore County. In Baltimore County, you have to come up through the ranks to become a colonel, where a chief in Baltimore City can bring in whoever he wants. So I would want to have some consistency in how you can put in your top brass and have that be across the board, as opposed to having to come through the ranks. Because they'll say, hey, look, sorry, Tony, it's going to take time. You know, it takes time from the time they come in before they get colonel. You got to wait 20 years, et cetera, et cetera. So you don't have a way to short circuit it and make immediate fixes when that is the case. So that would be the third thing that I'd like to see.
Tony Fugit is our guest. Before we wrap here, and I've been watching Adam Jones play baseball in Japan. Are you watching too?
I get the highlights. I do get the highlights.
All right. I saw
and there have been quite a few of them for Adam, as a matter of fact.
I follow him really on Facebook, right? And nobody's playing baseball here, and Moeller thinks they're going to play baseball in America, and I'm crossing my fingers and all, but I've seen our leadership done. And so I'm concerned that we're not going to play baseball, but it is refreshing, and I know how important it is to you and your family. So there, right?
Yep. We're very, very proud of Adam and Audie and the boys, and they took a bold jump and went to Japan to play baseball and living over there, and that is very, very bold. I think that it's been a cultural exchange. He's learned much about Japan, and Japan has learned much about him, and that's a very positive thing. We always support, and we're all about family and support family.
You know, I was in Japan, in Tokyo, the day he signed in December. I was over there chasing you too, and I love Japan. So for him to do that, I just said, wow, they're going to have so much fun. You know, they're going to love. And this is before COVID and all the mess and all that. So I just want to let you know we got an eye on that. Don, I'll let you take us out of here with your pal.
No, Nestor, I'm going to just say real quick, and Tony, remember this, I don't know how many years ago, a few years ago now, because daughter Audie's just a wonderful young lady. Actually served in the county on the liquor board, did a terrific job. She was an outstanding athlete in her own right, terrific basketball player. But a couple years ago, when she started to date Adam, I said to Tony, hey, nice young man, you like him? He said, yeah, I like him, but they've been together long enough now. It's sort of time to be thinking, putting a ring on that finger. So he did, and it's a happy ending. You remember that?
I do remember that. I do. We like you said earlier on, we do have a number of years under our belt together, and it's been a great journey. I'm looking for a number more years.
You know, I say the same things about Don. I say we've been together for a long time. We're looking for more.
So listen, Tony, thank you. I hope you'll be a regular contributor to the Baltimore Positive family. You have a lot to offer. I thank you for your years of service, and on behalf of the entire nation, please do whatever you can to make sure that everyone gets to vote on November 3rd, the most important election in our lifetime, Tony.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get the vote out, and we want to do as much as we can about the census. Everyone needs to stand up and be counted, because we're talking about dollars and resources, and that's very, very important with some of the issues that we're dealing, especially in this pandemic.
Don, I'm going to steal the line moving forward, because we have been saying democracy is not a spectator sport. We borrowed that one from Malia Cromer last year. I think moving into season two of Baltimore Positive, Don, I'm going to start saying vote like your life depends on it, because it does. How about that?
Because it does.
Tony Fugit joining us here.
Drop the mic.
There you go. Baltimore County NAACP Prez, Don Moeller, former Baltimore County executive, of course. Together, we are Baltimore Positive. On behalf of all of our incredible sponsors here at WNST and Baltimore Positive, Taharka Ice Cream, our pal Evan Brown over at State Fair, who's going to be joining us this week. Damie Hahn talking some crabs and crabbing issues for the 4th of July, as I wear wear my red, white, and blue. And if you haven't seen the crab picking video, Don Mohler was right again in that video. And 2.2 million people watching, it can't be wrong. So go check that out. Order some crab cakes from our friends at Fadley's. And don't forget, Mohler and Gary Realty on the beat, selling homes, listing. Jeff Mohler's out there. Find them at Mohler and Gary Realty. For Don, I am Nestor. Nasty at WNST.net always finds me. We are calm. We are local. We are Baltimore Positive.